Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby. And Andy Jacobs. And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We were very lucky to be joined by Fat Boy Slim, Norman Cook.
It's true, he was on good form talking about fake crowd noise.
Yeah, he wants to play his part in the world of fake crowd noise. Thomas Turner joined us. We've just been talking to Darren Bent about the trainer market. He's massively into it, he's a collector. So he enjoyed that chat, so hopefully you will too.
Yeah, big set of bonus. We had a normal Martin Kellner and Mike Ward talking about sport on TV, yeah. And regular TV.
That's right, we had a bit of a chat. Here it all is.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. And I started watching that game last night.
Which one? The Arsenal-Liverpool
game. Yeah. I watched a little bit of the Brentford game. If only they played like that at Wembley. Thanks.
Yeah.
And
Ben Rama looked like a bloke who was in a shop window to me.
Yes, I'd say so.
Played out of his skin.
Well,
didn't
I think there's a few. Palace are interested in. West Ham are interested in him. Yeah. You know. So
how many more players can Palace have like that though?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's not. They're going to stop playing sweet Georgia Brown when they run out. Andros and Wilf. And Ben, you can't have too many players who play like that.
No, I suppose not. But, you know, I still think they've got a good chance tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised to see Van Dijk and Salah playing. And despite the second strings, there's quite a lot of quality. And until it just basically fizzled out a bit, really, I got bored. I always know when I'm watching the game, I start consulting social media. But I switched over to the cricket, fortunately, just for the final ball.
Oh, yeah.
And Notts needed two from the last ball. And they played the ball, unfortunately, for a one, and the Leicester player just went straight through his legs, and they ran for two, honestly.
Oh, no.
You really felt for them there.
Well, you'd like to say what a great finals day it's going to be, because it is always a brilliant day at Edgbaston, but there's going to be nobody there, and it's going to rain all day, but it is October the 3rd tomorrow. So
I know.
You can understand
you
why
really,
it might
yeah,
be.
Yeah, exactly. James Milner, that was his 743rd game. Still way off the leading appearances, and goalies are in six of the top ten. I started, as you can tell, I was bored.
Yeah.
So I found out that Xavi in 2014, he attempted 2,799 passes with a 95% success rate.
Right.
But in 19 games, his expected goals was nil.
Okay. You blimey, you were bored.
I was so bored with that game.
What else did you get up to during the match?
Well, I did come up with a new nickname for my wife because...
Oh, okay. Is that a good idea?
Well, it is. She loves
it. Depends what it is.
She loves a kip and she's always falling asleep and staying for a couple of hours. I now call her Kipper Aretha Balaga. I think it's quite good.
You'll have to get her a shirt with Kipper on the back of it.
She likes
or get her a nightdress with Kipper on the back of it.
Oh, very sexy.
Yeah.
She was watching...
Bit off-putting.
Watching her iPad in bed while I'm recharging.
Don't take us into the boudoir, Andy. It's a place we don't really want to go.
Whilst I'm recharging for another show.
Oh, okay. You're
That's
recharging
all I do.
What?
Between shows, I just recharge.
I plug you into the mains.
That's it, yeah.
Been dead for 15 years.
This one was interesting. A jawless fish from 400 million years ago is man's earliest ancestor, according to new research. And I was thinking, I bet Bruce Forsyth and Jimmy Hill wouldn't have agreed with that. We're not related to a chinless fish.
Well, I never knew that, Andy. What a useful fact that is.
Sir David Attenborough is one of a new breed of senior social influencers.
Oh, what about that?
So I could be a cross between Clive Dunn and Zoella. I could be the new...
You could be, yeah.
Tips
for people of your age. I mean, the way that sort of Zoella's she knows her market, she knows what her followers are interested in. What would kind of your followers be interested in?
It's support hose.
Being curmudgeonly and making it an art form.
Very much.
Yeah, that would work.
A woman with a sleep disorder, thankfully now cured,
good,
woke up to find she'd bought and paid for a full-size basketball court. So she was like
a basketball court.
Yes,
I mean not just a couple of hoops.
No, no, it was a full size court that you order and it comes, and you obviously got to have the full, the ground to put it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she bought that. I mean, what on earth? That's
so great. She was sort of sleep shopping.
Yeah.
Is that a common thing?
Well, I think it
is. I mean, I know drunk shopping is, but not about sleep shopping.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And that was great to hear from the royal couple, the ex-royal couple yesterday, wasn't it, Prince?
I'm guessing, by the way, you say that, you don't think it was.
Well, no, not really. I love the quote from him. This really tickled me. He said, "I wasn't aware of so many problems in the UK and globally."
That's right, because you live in a castle, mate.
That's right.
Might have a lot to do with it.
I thought I did.
Now you've got out there.
What a surprise. The world's most privileged man says he didn't realise ordinary people have problems.
When you walk around like the rest of us do, you'll see there are quite a lot of problems out there. But when you live in a castle and just look through tinted windows for most of your life, then you'll probably find
it's
there isn't.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. And great photo in the Times. They do have a lot of wonderful photos in the paper. This is of Gabby Ash, an Australian ski jumper who tests her nerve on a 37-metre ramp, which enables her to train all round in Brisbane. But look, she basically ski jumps into a swimming pool.
She lands into water, yeah.
I don't even think Eddie the Eagle Edwards would do that. I mean, look, she seems to be able to swim to the side wearing the skis, but you think you'd drown, wouldn't you?
Well, I wouldn't think. It can't be that deep, can it?
It's got to be fairly deep, hasn't it? If you're ski jumping into it, it can't be that shallow.
Yeah, but I mean, she's not going head first into it. She's not diving into it, is she? She's landing with the skis, isn't she? So it's only to practice her jump. She's not doing. Otherwise, she'd overshoot the swimming pool.
Yes,
and land in the bloke's garden behind, wouldn't she?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from Talksport.
Norman Cook, of course, Fatboy Slim, has told our friends at Times Radio that he would like the opportunity to jazz up the crowd effects.
Yeah,
we've been hearing in the stadiums with no fans there, so we thought this is something we must explore. Good afternoon, Norman.
Good afternoon. Nothing gets by you, does it?
Oh no, we were straight on this because it sounds like quite a good idea. I mean, what have you made of it? It's a difficult thing to do, and occasionally they get it hopelessly wrong because the person who's up there pushing the button thinks it's gone in when it's gone wide.
There was one
so you get a like,
one
fake cheer, then an ooh. It's quite a difficult thing to do, isn't it?
I think, to be honest, it's a gauge of how much you're enjoying the game, whether or not you start listening to the sound effects.
It's true.
If it's a good game, then you're engaged and you're, you know. But if it's a bit of a dull game, your mind starts to wander. Mine, obviously, given my sort of history in the sort of production area, I just started listening to how they're doing it and figuring out there must be somebody sitting there with a little keyboard with like, ooh, ah, oh, boo. And I've just become fascinated with it, and it's like, you know, sort of the other day when the album were playing, they were singing this particular chant that we do just at the point when we would have started doing it, and I was thinking, so you're really putting a lot of love and thought into this.
Yeah.
So it was quite tongue in cheek that I wanted a job doing it, but obviously my DJing career is completely on hold at the moment, so there aren't any jobs coming.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting the other night. It's funny you should say that about Brighton, because Spurs, I thought, was the best I'd heard. I even thought it was even in the stadium, because it was purpose-built. They had "Come on, you Spurs," and all this sort of chants. They'd obviously used the right crowd, which they don't always do normally. If you sort of go for a general effect, it always sounds a bit odd.
Well, I got to wondering, is it like something centralised, or do the clubs have control of their home games?
Hmm.
Because the other day I noticed the away supporters were louder than the home supporters on one game. So it's, I mean, who actually does it?
I think most of them have come from the FIFA games. That's where the bulk of the effects have come from, I understand. So they've taken them from the club-specific stuff. But obviously it needs choreographing, as you know, as you said. That song starting at the moment for Brighton is a good example of someone with a bit of local knowledge, much like the Tottenham thing. So I think they are putting a fair bit of care into it. You can sense that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you notice the mistakes, but I'm actually loving the craft that somebody... I mean, I can only assume that it must be... Yeah, it's either an algorithm from FIFA or it's an out-of-work DJ who really loves his own team and he's getting into the craft of backing track sound effects.
Yeah, it is a keyboard. I've seen it. Somebody doing it.
Well, it's a mixing desk.
I think.
Yeah, and so they must have hotkeys for certain things that they can. And you want it to be instantaneous. This is the thing. You know, somebody's as I said, a few times you've heard him go, oh, ah, it's just, you know, you don't quite get the same.
I found myself being annoyed by the Bayern fans, fake Bayern fans.
You wound up by fake Bayern fans. That does take some doing, really, doesn't it? Yeah. What about crowdless? Have you taken the effects off, Norman? What do you make of that when you listen to the game?
Occasionally, I've gone in on the wrong channel and had it without the wild chat. And oh no, it's so sad. It's sad because it sounds like a kind of fourth division game where there's 30 people there.
Yeah.
But B, you can hear what the players are saying to each other. The worst one is when a player gets fouled. The way they scream, you just see the way. Obviously, the way they go down is sometimes a little exaggerated. But they just scream like girls when they go down.
Don't know, Bernd Leno, you'd have seen this one against Brighton just post-lockdown. He got a nasty injury, and I remember that was chilling the way he was screaming and everything, but then he did have a very bad injury.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't normally hear that, I agree.
Well, either way, whether it's faked or real, you don't really want to hear that sort of stuff. I think, like children, footballers should be seen and not heard.
Probably right, actually. So, Brighton, you must be quite pleased with the way they're playing. I think they've been unlucky. They were unlucky against Chelsea, they were extremely unlucky against United.
Yeah.
And They've looked good, haven't they?
We're an actual joy to watch. Yeah, I mean we haven't nailing the results, but the way we're playing is so attractive, and Lamptey and White have just really transformed the team. And yeah, no, it's an enjoyable thing to watch.
We were talking to your fellow Brighton fan Stephen Grant, comedian, just before the season kicked off, and I was making the point that no one was really talking about Brighton at all. They weren't saying, well, they're going to be top six. They weren't saying they're going to go down. They were just there. They just existed. And I thought, as a Brighton fan, that's a good sign, because that means you're a Premier League fixture.
Yeah, I think any sentence that doesn't have the word relegation in it, I'll say. But also, I mean, the only time I get a little bit annoyed is like a couple of seasons ago when we were beating Man United every week. And everyone was just banging on about how bad Man United were, not how good we were.
Yeah.
So, we in our wildest dreams couldn't hope to finish anywhere above mid-table. But we're really happy with that. You know, we've never been a top-tier side, and we're enjoying it immensely, and we'll take whatever we're given. I think for now we're survival. I know the powers that be would want us to be top 10. I don't think we'll be top six in my lifetime, but you live and dream.
Yeah, you got to. That's
you mentioned early on, away from the football, you know, the fact that there's nothing going on at the moment. I see you've committed to Best of All next year, along with some other artists, and we all got a hope that the world is a bit more of a normal place by then. But it must be. Somebody works live as much as you do, it's probably been a very weird time.
It has been, it's been weird, and you just have to take it on the chin. I mean, I'm under no illusions that my job, there's no way you can do my job and socially distance. We propagate exactly the opposite, the sharing of bodily fluids and, So I just had to take it on the chin, really, and find, hence I'm looking for other gainful employment in the meantime.
We've got our producer has dug out a bit of fake Brighton chanting. Should we have a listen to it?
Fake in what way?
Well, I don't know. Let's have a listen and find out.
I'm sure I can hear Norman in there somewhere.
I think you can definitely hear Norman. I think that's real chanting that we're using for our effects on, much like the TV channels are for on our game day coverage of matches. So we've been club specific as well.
That's good.
I think you have to be, don't you? You can't just have like generic cheering.
You got my mind wandering about the idea of fake Brighton chanting. Like, what if? Whether it's like Tottenham fans pretending to be Brighton just as a fake, or whether it's produced by robots or...
Undercover, where you start slagging off players. Yeah, that would be slagging off your own players. Get out of our club.
An accurate Brighton chant would be a collective moan, really.
You see that one that always beats the traffic. Like, see you, George.
Cheers, George. That one. All the best, George. See you in a couple of weeks. The one who has to beat the traffic with 10 minutes left. It's always called George, isn't it? A bloke leaves 10 minutes before the end. Did you get into the stadium for that limited crowd? That was it, 1,000, wasn't it?
2,500.
2,500. Did you get in for that match?
I didn't, no. No. I wasn't around. I can't remember what happened, but no, I didn't.
Right.
Everyone assumes that I just got some kind of golden ticket. I'm on the waiting list the same as everybody else.
Oh. Well, good to talk to you, to see you back playing live soon. I take you're still making music, are you?
I'm dabbling. I'm doing sort of mixtapes and live streams and things like that, but I'm still waiting for the difficult seventh album.
Okay. Cheers, Norman. All the best.
Thanks, Norman.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Andy, did you see that picture of Diego Maradona?
Yes, with his son.
Him and his son are both wearing kind of Buzz Lightyear face masks. I mean, you've got a new face mask that you showed us the other day, which is very similar. It's like a welder's mask, isn't it?
It's good. I got it off Instagram.
Yeah, you do a lot of shopping on Instagram, don't you?
It's all targeted. I watched this programme on Netflix last week. Oh, they're manipulating you, you know.
Yeah, what was it about?
It's called Social Disorder. It's fascinating. It's about how it's basically interviews with people who used to work for Google, Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they basically admit what they do and how they do it.
So you think you've been targeted with that face
mask? Well, everyone's targeted. That's the thing. They see what you're searching for, and then,
It's a pair of glasses that become a welder's mask, effectively, isn't it? Oh, yeah. They hook behind your ears, and then you put them over. Yeah, it's a really weird look. It's not great. It's a bit Darth Vader.
Steaming up.
A bit Darth Vader to broadcast.
Yeah, it's
isn't
not
it,
right, really, is it?
Yeah.
Do I sound different?
You sound like a small man in a box. Of course you do, yeah. You sound like you're talking behind a Perspex sheet. So there we are. That's a great radio, isn't it?
What a great purchase.
How much were they?
I don't even know, actually. It took months to arrive.
$8.99, were they?
No, I think they were more than that.
Oh, okay. You buy some toot on Instagram, don't you?
I do, really.
I've noticed this before.
Yeah. Do you remember this thing that a lot of columnists do? There's a lot of people do this online. They'll say, am I the only one? Do you know that expression? Am I the only person? Mm-hmm. And you always think, yeah, you are. Dan Wooten today said, am I the only person who thought this week's gladiatorial-style debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden was absolutely brilliant? Yes, you are the only one that thought that. Everybody else thought it was a complete disgrace. But
absolute
never mind.
Car crash. Going back to Diego Maradona briefly, Andy. I don't know if you saw a fantastic bit of footage earlier on today of him doing a post-match press chat, you know, the way that everybody does, with the advertising boards behind him. Well, that was the idea, but because he's Diego Maradona,
it's very funny,
when they were interviewing him, he kept walking.
Yeah.
So the person whose job it is to make sure the sponsor's board is behind the manager when he speaks to the press had to walk behind him, didn't he? Carrying it and keeping it in shot across the pitch.
At one point, Diego was talking. Diego moves to the side, so the player has to move to the side. It's really comical, isn't it?
Yeah, dear me. Go and check it out.
Yep. What else? It was nice to have Henry Winter to say how much he enjoyed the new Brentford Stadium.
He said it's really fabulous. Well, you got your season ticket.
Well, you know, it's frustrating thinking they could have beaten Fulham, but there you go.
Fulham fan, obviously.
Well, no, obviously not. But it'd be nice to think we'll get in there before the end of the season. Let's hope so. I was looking at the forthcoming marriages.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this bloke's a policeman, but he definitely should be. Mr. DCI Grant.
Yeah.
That's your initials. It's perfect.
I mean, Andy, if you wanted to sort of say, suddenly put the wind up someone. Say, sorry, what's your name? DCI Grant. Oh, okay. Well, sorry, I won't do it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What else have we got here? Not a lot, really.
Bit quiet. Is that you done then, basically?
Well,
You've got nothing more to say.
A bit quiet in the papers today, really. A lot of political stuff. Did I do this one about the bloke in India who did a world record 147 skips in 30 seconds while wearing roller skates?
What, filling them? Oh, you mean I'm skipping? Okay.
Imagine that. No, he did.
Skipping in roller skates.
Yeah.
That's impressive, that is.
I know. It's amazing, really. It's more amazing that it made the papers, but there you go.
It's more amazing that you read it out.
That's very true.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Now, you may have seen a picture in the papers this morning of a fine pair of sneakers, a pair of Off-White X Nike Air Jordan 1 trainers from 2018, and they could fetch up £2,200, they say, at Bonhams, the auctioneers. Now, a bit like we were talking to the guys at Bonhams earlier in the week about selling number plates, an LFC1 that went for about 125 grand. I didn't know that they were particularly in the sneakers market, but it's all part of a PopX culture sale next week in New Bond Street.
Warhol-ish type stuff.
And, yeah, they've got, there's a lot of art in there and different stuff, but there is about sort of 12, 15 pairs of sneakers. So joining us once again, the man we often turn to when this subject comes up, is the author of The Sports Shoe, A History from Field to Fashion. That is Thomas Turner. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Have you had a chance to check out the Bonham site yet to see what's on sale?
Yeah, I have. I've had a check out of the site. I've had a check out of my bank balance as well. I don't think I'm going
to put any good in. Why are these sort of prices they're going for? Are they the kind of prices you would expect as someone who knows the market?
I think some of this stuff is, there is a market out there for it, and you've got prices of several thousand pounds, so it's not entirely surprising. I think the thing that's kind of insane is just the markup over what they would have cost at retail. So they've got a Dior one there, which was at £2,000, is the most expensive one at retail, and that's up to something like £20,000. But a lot of these other ones, like the one you mentioned, they were sold for, I don't know, £200, £300, and now they're being sold at auction for several thousand, so there's massive demand for them, which is
these
kind of crazy.
Particular shoes, are they box fresh, are they unworn?
I think they are, yeah. I think these are ones that have been bought and, you know, kind of laid down as though they were a fine vintage wine.
That's amazing.
And brought out a few years later, yeah.
These particular ones, were they limited edition ones, which is why they've increased in value?
The one's a Sky Jordan as opposed to an Air Jordan. You could explain the difference.
Oh, there's one of them that is, as far as I'm aware, an actual shoe from the kind of the 80s, so that's an old one. But the vast majority of the shoes that you've got in that auction now are relatively recent collaborations with streetwear brands, artists, the Supreme stuff, the Virgil Abloh stuff with Off-White, Travis Scott, who's a rapper. And these are some of the shoes that are produced in really limited numbers, kind of, you know, a few hundred pairs perhaps worldwide, you know, 1,000 pairs worldwide. So there's an absolutely huge demand for them because there isn't the supply is pretty small. Yeah. And so that's why you've got this, kind of excitement around them and people just wanting them and people willing to pay vastly over the original retail price for them.
Is it a bit like you mentioned wine there, and if you buy a bottle of expensive wine that costs thousands, the idea is that you never really drink it because the minute you drink it, it's worth nothing. Is that the same with these, that if you actually start wearing them, they then immediately lose value?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, if you've got some of these shoes and they're, you know, a bit knackered and scuffed and all the rest of it, they've still got a kind of inherent value in them, and somebody will want them. But they're not going to be worth as much as a pair that's never been worn, that's a sort of box fresh pair. The weird thing about them though is that it kind of like wine, that you can't keep them forever because they will eventually sort of disintegrate and fall apart if you try and keep them for 20, 30 years perhaps. You'll pull out a kind of shoe where the sole has crumbled and will no longer be wearable.
Well, even if they kept them in the box, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that would happen.
And I suppose, in that programme that we watched a little while ago and we last spoke to, that you were part of, talking about the sort of limited edition sneakers and that and this whole sort of demand and the market itself, that they are making them. They're a lot greener in the processes and they're making these trainers almost biodegradable. So in the this is not going to get any better, is it? Mm.
No, this is one of the things that these trainer companies are all concerned about at the moment, is how do you make it more sustainable and how do you try and make them more environmentally friendly, because there's been so much The use of plastics is such a big thing in the manufacture of sneakers. How do you perhaps move away from that? How do you use recyclable or recycled materials in them? And how do you make them in a way that's perhaps not as, you know, kind of socially damaging as perhaps the way they've been made in the past? So yeah, they're looking at much more, you know, more localized production, sort of more on-demand production, that kind of thing.
Andy mentioned the Last Dance factor maybe making a spike in the market. You think it has? Do you think that the collectible around Jordans has had a bit of a spike because of the Last Dance?
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of the things about this, the shoes that are on sale at the moment, is that the ones that we've spoken about before, those are actual game-worn shoes that Michael Jordan himself wore. So obviously you've got this kind of provenance with them, this connection to the, you know, the man himself and the great sort of stardom. What you've got with these ones, though, is these are kind of building on that, but they're not actually shoes that he ever, you know, they're not shoes that he played basketball in, really. They're shoes that are kind of linked to the Jordan brand. So I think what this is actually speaking to more is just the influence of street culture and streetwear and skateboarding and hip hop and pop music and all of that kind of stuff on mainstream culture, particularly on mainstream fashion. And that's what's creating the kind of desire around these shoes now. I mean, obviously the connection to Jordan and the Last Dance has spiked everybody's interest in it, but I think there's something else going on with these particular shoes that are on sale at Bonhams.
The fact that they disintegrate has put me right off. I was going to go in for it and put, them down as a sort.
Without being too blunt, Andy, they'll probably outlast you, mate, but that's it's just maybe not Thomas. I don't know. He might have more of a problem.
You're talking a good number of years. I mean, you're not talking, you know, like 2 years down the line, they're going to be falling apart, but this is
like myself.
It's already happening. Yeah, that's very true.
That's very interesting.
There's one pair, you said that Jordan has not worn these. He certainly hasn't worn one pair because they're a UK 3.
I know.
Size 3.
Yeah, it's
Jordan.
An interesting point there. Does size make a difference, if you'll pardon the expression? Yeah.
I think so. I think so. Michael Jordan, as a player, he wore size 13 shoes, and a 13 and a 13 and a half because his feet were different sizes. I think when you're collecting them, I mean, most of them are the ones that are most in demand are the ones that are kind of wearable sizes, like your sort of 8, 9, 10 kind of thing. And then you get the ones at either end, the ginormous ones and the really tiny ones, which are slightly easier to pick up, I think. But if you want them just for, you know, you want a kind of artifact to look at or a thing to own, then perhaps getting it in a size that you can stick on your foot isn't going to be so important. So maybe the size 3s would be a good way to get into this if you just want to collect the item itself.
And is there, finally, a bunch of collectors that you come across that you would fully expect to be involved in this auction? Are there people that you know of that will definitely be interested in this and they'll be fighting out with other people that you know as well?
I think there's a lot of people looking at it, and I think there's a lot of people probably looking at their bank balances and perhaps thinking similar things to me, that I'm just not going to be in the game for this one because it's a lot of money. I think it's almost interesting the way they're pitching this, because the other items in the sale are all artwork. So you've got stuff by Banksy, by Andy Warhol, by Peter Blake, all that kind of thing. And they're putting these shoes, they're kind of classifying them as an art product, and that's a new thing that you're seeing in sneakers, and it's been developing over the last few years. But this idea that they're being made with artists, that the design is really important, that they're produced in limited numbers, like if you were getting, say, a Warhol print that they only made, you know, 500 of or 50 of or something. The shoes are on that kind of level now, and so that's why you're seeing these going into an art sale like this at Bonhams, I think. So there's a sort of shift there, or perhaps away from the kind of sneaker collector, the type of guy who would be, you know, hunting down Air Jordans or Nike Air Force Ones or Adidas or whatever it might be. And it's actually moving to people who are collecting artwork and, you know, that kind of thing as a, you know, more almost as an investment kind of thing.
Good stuff. Good to talk to you as always. Thomas, thanks very much for joining us.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Time then to look at some of the sporting TV of the week. And Martin Kellner once again joins us. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon, boys. You okay?
Yeah, we're not too bad, thank you.
Good.
What have you been watching this week?
Well, I won't pretend it's been a fun week. I really won't.
Okay.
I watched that, not sport, I was looking to the sport for a bit of relief, but I watched that ITV drama, you know, about the honour killings with Keeley Hawes. Oh. I mean, it was a magnificent show, but no laughs in that. No laughs in the BBC documentary about Harold Shipman.
No.
I was talking about unnecessary warnings the other week. Mm. I was looking down the menu of stuff that I'd recorded, and there was a programme I'd recorded called The Cult That Stole Children. Mm. How an Australian cult acquired children, it then allegedly starved and injected with LSD. Contains some scenes which some viewers might find upsetting. And I thought, some viewers?
Yeah.
Who are these viewers that won't find that upsetting?
Yeah, they shouldn't be watching it.
No, really. They should be locked up, to be honest. Yeah. So, as relief...
Very dark start to this week's review.
Anyway.
Well, yes, there's a dark... Well, have you not noticed how many programmes there are now on TV about... I don't know whether it's just coronavirus or what, but there's so many programmes about serial killers and so many grim stories, grim dramas. There's a thing about Dennis Nielsen, which I suspect you watched.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was brilliant. All very well done. You know, David Tennant was magnificent in that. But it's all a bit grim. So I watched a 30 for 30 documentary called 42 to 1.
Brilliant. I've seen it.
It's great, isn't it? Well, 42 to 1, for those who don't know, were the odds when Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson in 1990 in Tokyo.
Yeah.
But I liked the scenes at the start with Buster Douglas and his brother Bill, who were not as slim as you might imagine. And they're outside the house where they grew up in Columbus, Ohio. And there's a shot of them from the back. And you know how some people, when they get a little bit older, the weight goes to the stomach or it goes to the backside? In Buster Douglas's case, it's gone to his neck. It was the biggest neck I'd ever seen.
It's all settled on his neck.
Yes, everything. I mean, well, both of them had quite fat necks, but especially Buster Douglas. Now, I don't know what a 22.5-inch collar size looks like. Wow. You'd have more idea than me, Andy, with your background in gentleman's outfitting. But that's what it looked about, 22.5, anything up to 25 inches, that collar size. But it's a fantastic story. It's a really great story. He sacked his dad. Some people won't know this, but after he'd been beaten for the IBF title by Tony Tucker, this was all in the run-up to the fight against Tyson in Tokyo, he sacked his dad because his dad, who was also a boxer, Bill Dynamite Douglas was his dad, who was much more of a ruthless boxer than Buster Douglas, actually. And he sacked him, and I was quite impressed with anybody who can sack their dad. I know it happens in tennis from time to time.
Yeah.
But
a difficult conversation over a Sunday dinner, isn't it?
Well, especially when your dad is Bill Dynamite Douglas.
Well,
good relationship between father and son. It was a good sort of family story. Enjoyed it very much. Nobody gave him even an inkling of a chance.
No.
In that it was a bit like West Ham Wolves last Sunday. No,
it was probably 42-1.
They weren't 42-1. They were 12-5, and I did back them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was rather chuffed about that. It was a bit of light relief. And I do like when they introduce Mike Tyson. Obviously, they say the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, and I'm always reminded of George Carlin's joke, which says, "If it's undisputed, what's all the fighting about?"
which I
rather like. So I watched that anyway, which was fun. Mm. I tell you what else I watched, a thing called Mulligan.
Yeah, which I think we're going to be talking to the makers of this on Monday. Very interesting. It's on the Golf Channel, isn't it?
It's on the Golf Channel, which is not a channel I tune into habitually, but I was told this was a good programme. Mm. And it was. It was sort of about the redemptive power of golf, if you like.
Yeah.
And if you are a golfer, you'll know what a mulligan is. It's when you're allowed an extra shot, but it doesn't go onto your score sheet.
Yeah,
so it's good. It's amputee golfers, basically. There was one guy who was a sort of former military guy who there was an IED, an improvised explosive device underneath his vehicle, and he woke up later in Birmingham. He was amongst these amputee golfers. And he said, "I heard this Scottish voice. I thought I'm in hell." That was worse. Oh, blimey. He says, it was worse than that. I was in Birmingham. there's a bit of humour in it as well. Yeah. But it's like I say, it's about the redemptive power of golf. And it's very good. And you can tell the maker that
you enjoyed it. I know it features like four different golfers with their stories, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
with,
it was a pro, wasn't it? Jack Newton, who lost his arm and then carried on playing.
We'll talk about that. Martin, I understand you were watching a documentary about Tracy Edwards, the yachtswoman.
Yeah, because I'd not seen Tracy Edwards since the 1980s, you know, when I remembered her. It's interesting when you see these people that have had a moment, a bit like Andy Warhol's 15 Minutes of Fame. You know, she had that obviously in 1989 when she was in the Whitbread Round the World race. And the programme started...
Sorry, Mike, she would have become a staple of the reality TV scene, wouldn't she? These days, had she done it now... You
absolutely.
Kind of feel that she would have ended up, had she wanted to, sort of ice skating or eating something unpleasant in a Bush Tucker trial, but because she had that kind of fame, didn't she?
Yeah, so it's very interesting you say that, because it sort of points up what a different era it was in 1989 when she skippered the first all-female crew to enter the Whitbread Round the World race. Mm. A lot of the early part of the programme is sort of telling you how mashuggy the Round the World race is, which I'm
mashuggy
assuming...
for those that don't speak Yiddish?
Completely mad.
Mad.
Yachting is one of the strangest sports. We only really see it in the Olympics, but I always say the same thing about yachting. But they'll go, this is a really close one. It's like a mile between the boats.
But I mean, the Round the World race, as she rightly said, everybody is trying to get away. Everybody's running away from something, which is she had an abusive alcoholic stepdad, and that's what she was getting away from when she went into yachting. But of course, when she first went into sailing, it was a totally male sport, and she was sort of below decks cooking up fried eggs for all these men.
Really?
But there were a lot of shots of how difficult that race is, how ridiculous, well, mashuggy is the word I know, that race is. She was saying, the ocean's always trying to kill you. It doesn't take a break, and there are lots of shots of angry sea, which reminded me of George Costanza from Seinfeld.
Yeah. When he said, the sea was angry that day.
My friend, the sea was angry that day, my friend.
Not a marine biologist.
No. And if anybody's got Seinfeld on Amazon, I think they're all on Amazon Prime. Mm. I think that's about season 6 as well.
One of the great ones, I'd say. Beautifully plotted.
It is one of the great ones. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, so Tracy, it was a BBC 4 documentary. So you know, quite wordy and everything. But what you know, I'd forgotten the story. Put it that way. And it's a brilliant story. And is it the Year of the Woman or something? I think it is.
What channel is it always?
It's always the Year of the Woman.
What channel is this on, Martin? Where can we find War on the Waves?
It's on BBC 4,
okay.
And it's the way I'm celebrating the Year of the Woman.
That's good, Martin. Now, yes. Are you likely to return overnight?
There's always a chance. Yeah. There's always a chance. Last week it had problems with the internet on this show, and then it all went swimmingly at 1 o'clock in the morning when everybody was fast asleep, which was a bit disappointing. But hopefully it'll happen at 1 a.m. to 6 o'clock in the morning.
Brilliant. Marvellous. Martin, we look forward to it. That's tomorrow night and the night after. And we'll catch up with you next week, Martin. Thanks very much.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We now turn to the non-sporting TV of the week. Brighton supporting. Been a bit of a Brighton day. We had Norman Cook on earlier on. Can't have too much Brighton. Mike Ward joins us from The Star. Good afternoon, Mike.
Oh, Miss Norman. I was just as you said that, I was writing the words Fatboy Slim on my computer in a completely different context.
Really?
That's spooky.
No, weird. It's going to be in the podcast because he was on good
form.
Oh,
yeah, of course, yeah.
So if you want to hear it.
Yeah. I always do.
Yeah, have a listen back. And he was on very good form. He talked a bit of Brighton, you'll be pleased to hear.
Yeah.
So, before we get underway, I happened upon a show last Sunday morning on ITV featuring Alan Titchmarsh, but I think it was actually made for Alan Partridge. It's called Love It. Listen to this description and tell me this wouldn't have been brilliant for Pear Tree Productions. Love Your Weekend with Alan Titchmarsh. Joining Alan Titchmarsh in his barn in the Hampshire countryside. And it is, it's in a barn. And he says things like, think of this as your home from home.
What, a barn?
Yes, a barn. It's a nicely done up barn.
I'll bring you out some biscuits.
But joining Alan Partridge at his barn in the Hampshire countryside are Ray Mears and Fern Britton. Yeah. Ray rustles up a campfire breakfast using bushcraft, and Fern talks of her love of Cornwall.
I'm not eating Ray's breakfast, it'd be vile.
But it's pure Partridge. Go and check it out next Sunday morning.
I think I did catch a little bit of it a couple of weeks ago. But that's great. That's my weekend.
He has a day on
weekend.
Allotment with Mary
Sounds
Berry.
A winner.
Yeah. Forget, but that's probably going to be on the ITV Hub. I can probably download the whole lot and binge watch that.
It's fantastic.
Good luck with that.
So have I got news for you? Returns tonight. Are they back in the studio now?
I think so. The 60th Good. Series. So obviously the last one was very weird and sort of had to play it by ear to a large extent, didn't
60th
it?
60th series. Yes. Wow.
But it's odd, isn't it? We have a lot of those series that sort of come back and go away again. And I mean, you know, we talk about Jules Holland, for example. That's a 50 something and. You know, for all sorts of different reasons. But yeah, it has been going on a while. I mean, I don't know whether we felt before everything went weird, it was starting to lose its way a bit. I must admit, I'd gone off it a little bit. I just felt
I
it was...
I haven't watched it for a long time.
I felt it was a bit tired.
It's still very good. When I tune in, you know, the writing's sharp and the ideas are good. I still think when you get a good lineup, it's a good show.
Of course, it's recording on Thursday night, and of course, obviously, significant events today mean that can't be included in the context of the show, unless they start to re-record it, who knows. But yeah, it's going to be interesting as well, just to see how they gradually start to build it back into something resembling... the old normal, as they say.
And also back tonight is Graham Norton, and they're back in the studio as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've still got guests, obviously. Jolly Parton's on from Nashville, so she's obviously coming down the line. She talked about the fact that she wrote, I Will Always Love You, and which Whitney Houston covered, and Jolene. Apparently, she reckoned she was looking through some old demo cassette she recorded, and she wrote those two songs within a couple of days of each other.
Wow.
Can you imagine if you just had one burst of creativity over like a 48-hour period in your life?
Yeah.
You'd be made for life, wouldn't you? Wait, do that.
I've only had one burst over 20 years. No one can remember
I couldn't pinpoint when it was.
No.
When was it? Yeah, that is amazing, isn't
it? That is incredible, isn't it?
So much part of Graham Norton's show, though, is that interaction with him, working the crowd, getting laughs from the crowd.
Well, to be fair to Graham, I thought by the end of the series, I thought he'd come to grips with it quite well. It was a disastrous start, but we all know about those things.
It's
difficult. It was technically very difficult for him.
And I think people are quite forgiving and have been quite forgiving because, you know, we're all making this up as we go along and, you know, consequently everything evolves. So, you know, even these series now, which are starting to get audiences back by, you know, a few weeks down the line, hopefully they'll have changed again. So you just have to keep adjusting, don't you?
Yeah.
It was fascinating to see how well Bake Off did, especially with the 16 to 34 group, and I've been a fan of Extra Slice for a long time. I watched it last week, and Tom Allen's excellent in it.
Allen is brilliant, and the whole social distancing thing when he's walking around with that micro with the sort of whisk on the end of it, he managed to turn something which in almost every other context is an awkward part of the programme, the whole social, and make it funny because he was sort of, you know, because he has that slightly sort of tongue-in-cheek aloofness towards the contestants anyway, it sort of accentuated the gag. It didn't actually make it awkward, it made it funnier. I just think he's the best part of that show. It does. The only sad thing is that when he's finished doing his bit, it's never quite as good for the rest of the show after that, but it's still a good watch.
So it's 8 p.m. Channel 4 tonight.
You can always turn off at that point.
Yes. I have to think. I think I'd probably
and
do
we
it.
Should point out times. BBC One, 9 p.m. I Got News For You, as you probably expect. Graham Norton, BBC One, at 10:45
have you
tonight.
Not put in Spitting Image because it's not generally available.
It's on BritBox from obviously.
But it's not because BritBox, you've got to buy that, haven't
BritBox you? Is fine. Well, I think what you should do, because you can get a week's free subscription, so basically it's available from midday tomorrow. I haven't seen it because there was a screening which I haven't been able to get to this afternoon. That was the first one. It's you have to be a BritBox subscriber. The audience is obviously going to be considerably smaller than the 15 million or so it used to get at its peak in the 80s and 90s.
It was such a strange decision, this, to put it on there. I mean, it's a big show. It's costing a fortune. Surely yeah. you'd want as many people. It's topical, so you can't show it at another point. You'd have thought that they'd want well, to.
This know, is obvious. They want to drive the idea, subscriptions.
Yeah, but you know, so
it is strange when you bear in mind it's an ITV, BBC sort of. You know, you have to compartmentalise your thinking. You know, as an executive, to think that that's a good idea to stick it on there rather than see the bigger picture and thinking.
Well, they think they've got something that is good enough to make people. Stump yes. up £5 a month for. So
yeah, you, yeah. You know, but I think an awful lot of people will that. Probably do the 7-day free thing and try it out. And maybe, you know, if a fraction of them stay, then I guess, you know, as long as it pays for the cost of doing the thing, then.
It's a palaver. I did that when I first joined it when it first came out. Yes. It is a bit of a palaver signing up and doing all that. But there you go. If you're desperate to see Spinning Image, you'll do that.
Danny yeah. Dyer is back tomorrow night, 9:15, BBC One.
It's the casualty slot, isn't it? I mean, I was looking at that. It's 9:15. The Wall. This is the game show, the second series of his game show, which I can't say, you know, I'm going to be tuning into. But it's not, I'm sure it's normally on about 7 o'clock. But then, of course, you've got Little Mix The Search at 7 o'clock. Yeah. You know, so putting together.
Search for what?
They're searching for Little Mix. I don't know where they've gone.
It goes on for 2 hours and 15 minutes. Is it Little Mix The Search?
No.
There's something in between there.
No, strictly the best of musicals in between. Oh, the compilation of the best moments from the.
The Wall. This is not. Is this a new series of something he's done before? It's a game show, isn't it?
It's a game show, yeah. And there is a wall in it. It's a bit.
It's not like Bring On The Wall.
No, it's not the one that Goffey did when he was in that Savoloyski in those sort of shiny outfits.
It's predominantly based on the classic Pink Floyd album. No, it's not really.
it's just Danny talking it through track by track.
Yes, absolutely. And I wouldn't miss that for the world.
Angela Rippon asked the questions.
Of course.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, that's a
yes.
interesting
good
booking.
Gig.
Yeah, what a weird show. I've not watched it. Is it good? What's Danny like? Is he menacing?
I've sat and watched
Does it sound good?
Sat and watched it for a little while, and put it this way, I've put it at the top of the list of Saturday, October the 3rd choices with Little Mix and Strictly the Best of Musicals. It's a thin weekend in that respect.
Yeah. On Sunday, though, Top Gear has moved to BBC One. I often wonder what sort of difference this makes, because basically it's pushing another button on a remote, but it's surprising that they get more viewers on BBC One.
Automatically do. I don't know what that
is. It is a very straight. Well, it's the same as we talked about Bake Off earlier on. The figures that they got this week were the highest they've had since it was moved from Channel 4. To Channel 4 from BBC One, where and previously to BBC Two. But it does make a difference. It's almost as if, you know, for all this talk of, you know, binge watching and streaming and personal choice and not being shackled to the schedules, people come home, switch the telly on one channel and put the remote in the corner and just leave it. And you know, maybe that's what we do. I guess I do to some extent, if I'm honest. Sometimes I'll just put it, and it's just the noise. You know, so this idea that we're all incredibly selective is probably true in a lot of cases, but sometimes, you know, it's just a noise in the background. And if you like BBC, BBC One, and that's your habitual viewing platform, maybe you just stick with it regardless.
So New Five is the same lineup: Chris Harris and Paddy McGuinness and Freddie Flintoff.
Chris Harris, actually, to be fair to the guys, I always feel he's the guy who really holds it together. Yeah. He's the nuts and bolts that keeps the whole thing going. Because Freddie Flintoff and Paddy McGuinness, you know, obviously they're great in what they do, but they, you know, I feel as if it would be flimsy if it was just relying on them, shall we say.
Okay, so that's Sunday night, 8 p.m. on BBC One. Mike, always a pleasure. We will catch up with you next week. Have a good weekend.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. We'll do it all again on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.